Hi, this is Julie.
This is Liz.
This is Sheila.
This is Monica.
This is Leanne.
We are the Satellite Sisters.
You are listening to Satellite Sisters to Go.
We are the Satellite Sisters. Welcome to the show. It is Sunday, September 28th. I'm Liz Dolan. I am here in Santa Monica, California, joined on the line with my two non-Southern California sisters from Portland, Oregon, Monica Dolan. How are you, Monica?
Good morning. Good morning, ladies. I'm great.
Good, good. And Julie Dolan from Dallas, Texas. What's going on there?
Not a whole lot, Liz. It's still summertime here, but I'm happy to add to the geographic distribution of the show.
Okay. Well, I do want to explain that later today, as we record this on Sunday morning, then I will finish the show, I will edit the show, then we are rendezvousing, I am rendezvousing with Sheila and Leon and various other family members down at the beach for lunch at 1 o'clock to celebrate my belated birthday and Sheila's upcoming birthday. Sheila's birthday is this week. And so you guys have the whole show to figure out, like, in the, like, 17 minutes I have between finishing the editing of the show and showing up down at the beach lunch, what can I get Sheila for her birthday? Like, what can, you know what's available in my neighborhood.
All right. Okay, Liz.
Yesterday, okay. I actually considered buying her a Trader Joe's gift card because I was at Trader Joe's. And then I just thought I could probably do better than that, but maybe not. Maybe not.
You know she loves gift cards, Liz.
I know she does.
You can't go wrong with those. Yeah. She goes a long way on her gift cards.
Right, yeah. Right. And she likes, you know, takeaway food, and it seems like TJ's is good for that. Anyway, think of that. We can come back to it at the end of the show. We have a very full show. Of course, we're starting with Notes from Nana. Julie has advice for Hillary and Bill Clinton on how to be grandparents, because she's an expert on that. Monica, you've been traveling around the state of Oregon, so we're going to hear about a few of your house calls. And we have other travel stories, including Julie's getting to the bottom of air rage. I want to discuss a story in the New York Times the other day that was a conversation between Arianna Huffington and Kobe Bryant about what makes them successful. And I think it's interesting because we at Satellite Sisters, you may think of us as just sisters sitting around talking to each other, but we also talk to Arianna Huffington and Kobe Bryant. So, you know, we have a little bit of a back channel communication on this one. So we'll talk about that. Monica has, is it the most mispronounced food words, Monica?
Well, it's frequently mispronounced food words.
Okay.
So
all right.
I'm going to straighten you out on some of these words.
All right. I have an issue with Pepperidge Farm that I would like to raise.
Oh.
You know how much we love Pepperidge Farm, but sometimes they just go too far. Julie has some college application trends. And, of course, we have to bring it on home with Derek Jeter's finale at Yankee Stadium the other night. Really made you think. But, okay, that's our whole lineup. But then unofficially, do we really want to talk about the Clooney wedding? Any comments on that?
Yes.
Could it have been more impossibly beautiful?
No. Are those two, like, the most gorgeous people ever on their little boats and with the sunglasses and that Italian sun in their faces? I mean, it's just amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm waiting for the wedding pictures, but I have just been mesmerized by the George leading the teak boat in the Vaporetto down the Grand Canal. I heard they closed the Grand Canal down in Venice.
Sure, why not? It's
the wedding procession in the boats. It was crazy beautiful.
It was so beautiful. And they're both individually so beautiful, collectively beautiful. Venice is so beautiful. Their friends, of course, are beautiful. You can't have any problem with this. You know, you want to hate this kind of, display. But when it's pulled off this perfectly, I have no problem. I wish them all the best.
Me too. I thought it was very pleasurable. We have had nothing but bad news in the news. Why not? This was real movie star glamour. Thank you very much. It was great. I was reading at TMZ, though, that they had...
Julie Dolan at TMZ. I like it.
TMZ. I'm all over it now. You know, of course, they had very tight security for the big Clooney wedding. And apparently, all the guests were instructed to leave their cell phones in their hotel room. Okay, that's no big surprise. Or if they took their cell phones on their little boats. There was a cell phone kiosk right outside the wedding before they went in. And then each guest at the wedding was issued their own burner phone with a code, okay? And that was kind of like the double check that you are the person you are, because the phone would only work if you had the right code. Okay, everyone got that. And as well, each person was issued some kind of camera. So you were allowed to take pictures. But here's the catch. All the cameras were coded so that, let's say, Amal's, I don't know, you know, uncle got a little crazy and thought he might want to release some pictures of the wedding party ahead of time. George Clooney would know exactly who released the pictures.
Wow.
So, I'm telling you.
I just like the idea of celebrity burners that, you know, everybody needs a back channel. And if they have their own, I support that. I like it. Wow, that's a lot of detail to have to go through.
I know, but I think it will be a trend in future weddings. People will be issued burner phones at the weddings, right? How great. How great is that, right?
I just want a regular phone.
I just want them to live happily ever after, really. George and Amal. They just seem like they're going to have a good life together. Yay for them.
Well, good for them. Okay, well, the other wonderful story, the other good news story of the week is, of course, the arrival of Charlotte Clinton. I don't even know. Mazinski, is that his last name? This is Bill and Hillary Clinton's granddaughter who has arrived, and she's great. And I was just reflecting on Bill and Hillary as grandparents because, as you sisters know, I'm a grandmother. I relish in my role as Nana. And I just have some notes that I want to pass on. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, first of all, I think we could agree that Bill Clinton is going to be an excellent grandfather. Don't you think?
Yeah.
I think he's just going to be an outstanding grandpa. I don't know. He's a real natural. I think he's really going to relish in the relationship with his granddaughter, and I think it's going to be fun for little Charlotte. I think she is going to have a great time with Grandpa Bill.
Mm-hmm. That seems likely. Do we know that he's going to be called Grandpa Bill? They're going to be? Okay, all right.
No, have not heard yet, but I think Grandpa is good. What would you call Bill Clinton? You can't. I don't know.
Grandpa in chief. I don't know. I really.
Grandpa Gramps? No, Gramps? No, I think Grandpa Bill. I think that's my bet. Okay. Now, Hillary. Okay. Here I have this. She has an incredibly important role. She is the grandmother. She's also the mother of Chelsea. So first of all, Hillary, I'm sure I saw the picture. You look like you're enjoying it. That's super good. Okay. When you go over to Chelsea's apartment, okay, you just cannot show up with that whole entourage that she usually travels with. You know, the Secret Service, she's got staffers, they've all got cell phones, they got Wi-Fi connections. You know, that is way too much commotion for the new mom and the baby and that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so she has got to find a way to somehow to ditch the Secret Service, or they have got to stay outside. She's also, talk about burner phones, she's got to check all of her phones, okay?
Yes.
Her attention has got to be 100% on her new granddaughter and on her daughter, because, you know, I mean, now we know we can count on Hillary Clinton, you know, she's very forceful. She's awake for those 3 a.m. phone calls, you know. But do you think she's going to, I don't know if she's going to get up with the baby. I'm not sure. I kind of have this sense that there may be day and night nurses going on with Chelsea, but I'm not sure.
Liz, summer is coming up, and you know what that means? It means you're grilling. You're grilling and chilling with your butcher box. What do you got going on the grill this summer?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Because I'm going to be up in Bend for a part of the summer, I'm having my box sent there, Leanne.
That's great.
Go on vacation with your butcher box is what I'm recommending. Yeah, either way, you're just going to buy meat and fish and stuff when you get there. Why do that? Anyway, I love their steaks. I love their scallops. The scallops are really good. And the chicken thighs, all good. I'm ready.
That's right. ButcherBox gives you peace of mind and easy to find high quality meat and seafood you can trust. It's 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork that's raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. no antibiotics or added hormones. And as Liz said, delivered right to your doorstep. And you can customize that delivery plan, Liz, right? Because it can go wherever you want it to go, whenever you want it to go. If you want to delay it a week, you know, speed it up a week, you just go to your ButcherBox account and you can make that all happen.
It's so easy to manage online.
Yeah. And if you're like Liz, you can take your ButcherBox on vacation, which is... That's nice. That's nice. Nice to have something familiar there.
Yes.
So if you want to take your meat on vacation, sign up at butcherbox.com/sisters and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. So you can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/sisters and use code SISTERS to choose your free for a year offer, plus get $20 off your first order. Thanks, ButcherBox. Hey, it's Liz and Leanne here, and we want to thank PROS for supporting this episode of Satellite Sisters. Now, you know, Liz, I've been out and about with my new book, The Marriage Sabbatical. The book is getting rave reviews. I'm very happy. But you know what else is getting rave reviews? My hair, Liz, my hair from PROS is getting rave reviews.
Leanne, I am not surprised. You have been on that PROS hair regimen for quite a while. I mean, you have good hair anyway, but now you have great hair because you've really paid attention to it.
Well, Liz, PROS is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. And you know what? I love the regimen they have me on. Do I take the hair vitamins every day? Yes, I do. Do I use my shampoo and conditioner made especially for Leanne Dolan? Yes, I do. I sometimes use the leave-in conditioner when my hair's really dry? I do. And I even have a pre-scalp thing that they give me. Okay, PROS, you're the boss. I'll take it. You tell me what my hair needs. That sounds good. And here's the thing. It's personalization, Liz. For millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely Leanne's, okay? And I'm using it. PROS isn't just better for you. It's also better for the planet, Liz. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. So PROS, we love you. I love the photos of my hair. Couldn't be happier.
Photos of your hair. There are people in the photos, too. That's the thing about a book tour. Everybody has their picture taken with Leanne and then post it. So the hair is important.
Couldn't be happier, PROS. PROS is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin. They're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/sisters. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/sisters. And PROS is spelled P-R-O-S-E. pros.com/sisters. Thanks, PROS.
But, well, you were recently with your new granddaughter. Did you get up with the baby?
Yes, I got up with the baby. Yes.
Oh, you did? Oh, I thought you were staying at a hotel.
No.
Okay. All right.
Liz, no. You have got to help. You've got to help and support. The other big thing, and I think this is going to be a difficult role for Hillary, is you have to really zip it. You have to just keep your opinions to yourself. You know, you have to just, Hillary, here's what I want you to say. I just want you to repeat this. I know you'll make the right decision. This is what you've got to tell your children. No matter what it is, no matter what their parenting style, you just have to say, I know you'll make the right decision. And you have to just be super supportive. That's really key, particularly in these early weeks when everyone's so tired and exhausted and sensitive. And it's just so much. I mean, it's such a huge thing, you know, that, you know, you have this new baby and, you know, you've gone through all these changes. You've gone through labor and, you know, and delivery. It's a lot.
Well, I think it's going to be just as hard for Bill to zip it as Hillary, because he's a talker.
I know he's a talker, but
we know even from having him on Satellite Sisters, you can't shut that guy up.
No, I know. I know, but is he Grandpa Bill? No one's going to listen to him. So he's going to sit in the corner. He's going to have little Charlotte on his lap and he's going to be yakking away, and that's going to be fine. It's going to be like, you know, it's going to be like white noise. It's going to be like one of those machines or something. No, he's going to be great. He's going to like just tell her tales, walk around. I think it's going to be very easy for him to assume the role as grandpa. I think for Hillary, because she possibly has some other things on the on her plate this coming year, she may feel very torn in terms of what kind of role she wants to forge with Charlotte. But I want to tell you, Hillary, I think all grandmothers would say this, that you do not want to miss the fun of being a grandmother. I don't know what else you want to do with your life, but make sure you carve out some time to enjoy being a grandmother. So,
Julie, so you're saying for yourself, like you were just with your new granddaughter last week in Brooklyn, but if you had to choose between being with your new granddaughter, Josephine, and say, running for president.
There's no question, Liz. There's no question. Because
okay.
They're
all right.
Stage once, okay? Okay, I understand she has some choices in front of her. Okay?
She does. She has some career alternatives.
She does. She has some choices, but she is not, you know, she's not going to regret spending time with Charlotte. So if she can just keep the commotion down, keep the phones out, keep focused on, you know, the little family and the new baby, change a couple of diapers, Hillary. I think that would be good. It is a very basic thing. It's a very caring thing. And it's what regular folk do, right?
Well, they were obviously very hands-on raising Chelsea. So
yes,
it's not like she ever outsourced that before with
her own
daughter. So
I totally agree with that, Liz. No, I know that. And I think that, you know, they have, you know, cherished Chelsea. And I am sure Charlotte, as their new granddaughter, will have a very special place in their heart. So, I wish them well. I really do. I think, Grandpa Bill, you just wait. He's going to be an awesome grandfather.
I was thinking about the name Charlotte because it's a very fine name. I think
almost
it's
as good as Josephine.
I actually thought, like, okay, so your son and daughter-in-law named their little girl Josephine, but I wouldn't be surprised if Charlotte was in their consideration set, because if you like Josephine, chances are you also like Charlotte.
Yeah, you know, Liz, there's actually an app for that kind of stuff now. There's
app
that, yes, of course, if you like a certain category of names, it gives you other alternative names. So, yes, I'm sure that's probably true. Charlotte is a beautiful name. I like that name. Yep.
Okay. Well, good luck, Bill and Hillary. Call in whenever you want if you want to tell us how it's going. So, Monica, you were out and about this week.
I was. I had a busy week. It was really, really fun. I got to take a road trip to Southern Oregon because I got to make two house calls to study patients that are in my study in Portland, but they couldn't return to Portland because they live 4 or 5 hours away. So I turned it into this whole sort of loop of Southern Oregon.
Nice.
Saw a lot of the state I've never seen before. So my first stop was I went to Bandon, which is on the coast in Southern Oregon. Absolutely gorgeous beach. There's big rock formations there and stacks, haystack rocks, and big, wide, beautiful beach. But I got to go by the Umpqua River, which I've never seen, and then return by the Coquille River. I saw elk and deer and seals. It was just very, very delightful. And it was really fun going to the patients' homes, you know, and seeing them, because the last time I saw them was in the hospital. And now they're better. They're in their own houses. They're just really doing well. So it was a lot of fun. And the best thing about it, well, one of the best things was, well, first of all, I didn't have to go to work for 2 days. Let's just lay it on the line. I did not have to go into the office for 2 days. So I rented a car because work paid for the mileage. And I had a wonderful little GPS system, Liz.
So you haven't bought the phone yet, but you had that.
That sealed the deal for me about getting the smartphone, because I am telling you, I had to go like over the river, through the woods to find these two houses. And I never, ever would have found them with my stupid little printed directions from MapQuest. But instead, I had this woman talking to me, telling me the left turn was coming up. So my plan is, as soon as I get my next paycheck, I'm getting the iPhone. because I need someone to talk to me to tell me directions.
So, Monica, you are leapfrogging ahead with technology. You are going from, like, a dial phone to iPhone 6? Wow.
No, not going to get the iPhone 6 because I heard it bends in half. I'm just going to get an iPhone 5. But now I know I need the talking directions because I would have been very, very lost in, like, the woods of Southern Oregon if I didn't have that woman talking to me. So that was really fun. It was just great. You know, it was just great. I love a little trip to the coast, had some fish and chips and, you know, walked along the ocean. It was lovely. But every night I've been watching. Have you guys been watching The Roosevelts?
No,
I have not. I've missed the whole thing.
Oh, Liz.
Recommend it on our Facebook group. I know that.
I know. It's so this is the Ken Burns documentary. It's called The Roosevelts, An Intimate History. And it's about Theodore Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt. It is unbelievably good if you're interested in U.S. history. And it's 7 episodes. I think each episode is about 2 hours, so it's quite a commitment, but I just did a little bit every night for 2 weeks, and I have the last hour left tonight, and it's narrated by Peter Coyote, and for some reason, even though a lot of it, it's all about World War I, World War II, there's a lot of wars, but there's something about Peter Coyote's narration that I find extremely soothing. And I find it's just a perfect thing to do before I go to bed at night. And I feel like I've slept really well this week because I've been watching this documentary every night. And so I have 1 hour left tonight, hoping to get that in for a good night's sleep. But I'll tell you, those Roosevelts, they had some nice houses. Holy cow.
Really? Besides the White House, obviously.
Besides the White House, I mean, they, that group, I mean, Hyde Park, Springwood, they had this amazing house called Campobello that in Canada that I would love to visit someday. And then Eleanor had her own cottage, stone cottage at Valkill. So they just out of their houses to recuperate, regenerate, you know, be with their family. Anyways, it's just a really wonderful documentary. I highly recommend watching it.
Okay, well, I'm sure the PBS will repeat it 1,000 times, and that will also be available somewhere else to just download. So yeah, it's on my list.
Yeah, and it's on. You can watch it on the PBS website because that's what I did when I was at the beach. So just on my little laptop. Very, very good. Highly recommend. So,
Monica, how are you going to get to sleep when this is all, all done? Maybe you can watch other Ken Burns documentaries. Yeah, that Civil War one was really long. That could keep
That'll really make you fall asleep. Well, later on when I talk about the Ariana and Kobe story, they have advice about how to fall asleep. So,
oh, excellent.
We'll see how the pros do it.
All right. Hey, sisters, I have a story that caught my eye, and I thought of both of you because you're single working gals. And this is a new service that is being offered by the German airlines Lufthansa. Now, currently, it's only available in Germany, but I think you can imagine that this might catch on in the U.S. I wanted to get your take on it. What they are doing now is they have set up a service for home delivery of their business class meals. That's right. You can order up airplane food.
Liz, for you. Liz, this is a dream come true for you.
No, I'm sorry. This is my worst nightmare.
Yeah, because then you would feel like you never got off the plane.
Then you're always on a plane. Even this summer when I was kind of redecorating my living room and thinking about, well, I need a table here, or if I'm on the couch, I want to pull up a table here. I kept saying to myself, no, then it's going to feel like I'm in an airplane seat. I don't want to have any feeling of airplanes when I'm at home. Julie, why on earth would anyone want this?
Well, because it's pretty good food, okay? Well, it's chef-prepared. It's portion-controlled. You know, you don't get giant portions. And, it's high-quality food, so...
I just don't think airlines should be getting in the food delivery service.
Well, they've got planes and they've got food, Monica.
It's just like, it's pretty crazy.
But, you know, and Lufthansa in particular, they provide the food service for lots of other airlines, too. That's one of their big businesses out of Frankfurt. But I can see.
If you live in a place where the best food delivery you can get is from Lufthansa, then I worry for you. I mean, really, just like, how about Trader Joe's? I know they don't deliver, but they have just prepackaged food that Sheila enjoys. So,
does a flight attendant come to your door?
That would be nice, Monica.
With a beverage cart. That's what you need. You need the bev cart rolling up your front walk.
Okay. Well, maybe this won't catch on in your neighborhoods, but just be on the lookout for
okay.
it. Okay. And it's business class. It's not coach class. So yeah. It's supposed to be a little better. But, you know, I know, Liz, you've been on way too many planes. And Monica, when you travel, you know, it's always a rough road. So I was interested in this article that they had in the New York Times about was analyzing air rage. I mean, we all know that we have it, but now social scientists are really trying to deconstruct what are the elements that why are planes so antisocial? Like, what happens exactly on that? Because this year alone, there's been a real increase in the number of diverted flights due to passenger behavior. And, you know, it's the obvious things. It's the packed planes. It's the congested gates. There's the stress and fatigue of travel. But what
people get drunk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That adds to it as well. But really what happens, social scientists are saying in particular that the cramming of people into those skinny seats, it's people can no longer function appropriately when they're like boxed in like that. It leads to this sense of alienation, of cynicism, of, you know, anonymity, you know, things that you would never do in any other context. There's a real breakdown of social inhibitions, you know, whether it's, you know, jamming your seat back or, you know, throwing or cramming your luggage into the overhead, all kinds of things that, you know, nobody would do in other circumstances. And they've done like social experiments with rats, and they put them in very crowded places. And they've noticed that when they do this, the rats show, you know, sort of a pathological withdrawal. I find that the most helpful response on an airplane.
Just pathological withdrawal?
Yeah. Or sometimes it creates a frenetic overactivity as well. I mean, I'm sure you've sat next to people like that. But it's that they really, scientists are saying you lose this, your self-awareness. I don't know. Have you both felt that on planes where you don't feel like yourself?
Well, I feel it's not so much I don't feel like myself, but you do actively try to be oblivious to everything happening around you. It's like you turn off all of your normal sensors. And just to try to like live in your own head because your physical space is so small. And I feel like all the new laws, especially in California, we've had to vote on a new laws about humane animal raising or what is allowed and not allowed on a factory farm. And so you see these laws like, okay, whether it's the lambs or the chickens or the cows, if you have them in a stall, they need to be able to stand up, turn around and sit down again. And I think that should be a law for airplane seats too. If you don't have as much room as a chicken in a coop has, then yeah, you're going to start to go crazy.
Yeah, that's, I mean, Liz, well said. You know, but they don't really have many solutions to it. I mean, you know, they do feel like the onus really should be on the airlines. One airline tried a test where they asked the airline attendants to ask the passengers as they, you know, sat down on the plane, asked how many of them are going home to raise their hands, how many are going home, or how many are first-time flyers. And they said by asking these two sort of simple questions and getting people to respond, it created more of a, like a community.
A human bond
to help people cope. But Liz, I think what you've said is well put, that we are, it's worse than farm animals, right?
for. Luckily, it's for a shorter period of time most of the time. But, Monica, is that your experience too? Just a sort of disassociation?
Yes, zone out. I mean, especially when the seat in front of you is, the seat back is like 6 inches from your face. You just have to go into your head and just think Zen thoughts. And, you know, it's only for a short amount of time. I mean, can't everyone just get along? It's really, you know, unless you're on flights that are like 10 hours, but usually it's like a 3 or 5 hour flight. So I find it best just to stare straight ahead and not engage anyone and just think about getting to my destination.
But it's also the cumulative effect of the airports are so much worse than they used to be.
That part is extremely stressful. Yeah. Get there on time. Getting through the TSA lines, it's extremely stressful. I agree. It didn't used to be that way.
Even the boarding process, all of this adds to this dehumanization. Yeah, that's what they're saying. So that's it. You really, it's, you know, what you're experiencing is really real. And the fact that you're feeling antisocial things on planes is documented and validated by some of the research that's going on.
I also think there's something about the air. I notice when I'm watching a movie on a plane, I cry a lot more. Have you ever noticed that?
That is absolutely
true. Yeah.
It's true, right?
And you think it's coming out of oxygen?
People have commented about that. We talked about it at work. I cry so easily on a plane.
Yeah.
Thinking about things, if I'm watching a movie that's sad, listening to music that's beautiful, sad. Yes, and it's embarrassing, you know, because you're crammed in there and your tears are streaming down your face. But I that happens to me on planes. Mm-hmm. But what it is.
There's something about the air or the altitude or the pressurization. I'm sure they're factoring that into their study too, Jewel.
I'm sure.
All right. Well, on the other end of the travel spectrum, how about staying at home and just having a good time? That's what I believe in. And, you know, there's that frugal traveler column in the New York Times.
Yes.
And Monica, is it my imagination or does that Seth guy who writes it write about Portland a lot?
Well, obviously his friends here. You know, the New York Times just has a whole thing with Portland.
Yeah.
There's a story almost every couple of weeks about Portland.
Yes. You know,
the last couple of weeks, it was like, is it really where young people go to retire? You know, is it really this paradise? And there was a lot of comments on that. But I think he has friends in Portland, so he does end up in Portland a lot, which is fine with me.
Yeah. So in the Frugal Traveler this week, he talks about, you know, really low-cost travel around the Pacific Northwest. Portland is one of the cities. Vancouver was another city. So I wanted to ask you about some of these places he recommends, because I'm always trying to figure out, like, how much of a hipster is he? Like, I know these are the places that he likes, but would we ever go there, Monica? You know, are these places that you would try out? I'm guessing you've never stayed at the Friendly Bike Guest House. Have you ever put any friends up at the Friendly Bike Guest House on North Williams, where it's $40 a night to stay there?
It's a good price.
No, it sounds friendly. It's a good neighborhood, though.
Yeah.
There's a lot happening on North Williams, but, you know, I don't even do Airbnb. I don't believe in Airbnb. So I know other people do, but no, I've never stayed at the Friendly Bike House.
Okay.
But that's a pretty hip neighborhood.
Yes, that's what he says, is that that whole North Williams area is becoming a punchline of gentrification because of all the kinds of things that are going in there. So let's see. So he's recommended this place, a bar called Hop Heaven, where they have 60 microbrews, Oregon microbrews in stock. Have you ever, I know you're not much of a beer drinker, but have you ever checked that out?
I've never been to Hop Heaven. I've been to another brew pub. I've been to two brew pubs right there on North Williams, so. Hopworks and Fifth Quadrant. So I guess I don't know about that other brew pub. But.
Okay, now this place sounded good. Brunch at Pine State Biscuits.
Oh, Pine State Biscuits. That is a must.
Really?
Is a must. You get biscuits.
I'm in.
Fried chicken and then gravy and then like bacon. And that's in a biscuit sandwich. Pine State Biscuits is an excellent place. But again, like most places in Portland that are great, where the food is great and they're popular, the line's out the door. And right. I know he talked about Tasty and Sons.
Yes.
My favorite restaurants in Portland. But lines out the door. So you just have to be prepared for that.
Mm-hmm. But there is a whole Portlandia episode about brunch lines, I'm sure. If you haven't seen that one, it's a classic. Yeah, he does note in this story that the line snakes around the corner. But as you're standing in line, you get to watch them making the buttery treats and then smothering them in shiitake gravy.
Mm.
And for $13, which seems like like a deal. And then what else do we have here? There was a lot of, food trucks, of course. Are you a food truck taster, Monica?
I go to food trucks every once in a while, but there aren't any up where I work. They sort of, because I work up on a hill, they've sort of outlawed. Believe me, every day we dream about having a couple of food trucks up there. But of course, it would compete with the hospital cafeteria, so they won't allow that. But yeah, I go to some food trucks. I have a couple that I like, but you know, I don't go to a food truck every day for lunch, which a lot of people in Portland do.
Okay. Well, he sounded like he had a fantastic time in Portland, which he obviously loves anyway. He celebrated by buying a Pendleton wool plaid shirt, which, you know, you can see it. There are a lot of vintage clothing stores around town, right?
Yeah. And there's a lot of wool.
Yeah.
Wet wool, I think.
There's a lot of wool. In a few weeks, there's going to be a lot of wet wool.
Yep. As we always said, living in Portland on Halloween, that curtain comes down. All those poor kids with their cute Halloween costumes with their big raincoats over them. That's how you celebrate.
That's a good time in Portland, Oregon.
Okay, so I wanted to mention this story in the Time Style section the other day, the title of which is For Arianna Huffington and Kobe Bryant, First Success, Then Sleep, which was kind of an interesting headline, I thought. Anyway, the basic idea is that these two know each other, and they got together for lunch with a New York Times reporter just to talk about, like, how much they have in common, which, you know, you wouldn't necessarily think, right?
Not those two, right?
Not those two. So the first thing that caught my eye here is that they are eating at the Antonello restaurant in Santa Ana, California. Huh.
What's that?
Santa Ana.
I'm really surprised that Arianna Huffington has ever been to Santa Ana. Explain where Santa Ana is, Liz.
Well, Santa Ana is Orange County, which is where Kobe Bryant lives. So obviously he had the power in this scenario to bring her south, but it's sort of south and a little bit east, correct?
Industrial city.
I've never been to Santa Ana.
Of course you haven't, Liz, because you live in Santa Monica.
Yes. Okay?
I knew you hadn't been there. So it's a very unusual spot. It is not, you know, it is not a glamour spot in Los Angeles. It's a very sort of industrial city. It is not a place where you'd expect to find either Kobe Bryant or Arianna Huffington. They're there because maybe the food is good at this restaurant. Who knows?
Well, as they walk in, the reporter notes that Kobe Bryant is speaking fluent Italian to the waiters, Julie.
Ooh.
Because the reporter did not know what anyone who knows Kobe Bryant does know, is that he basically grew up in Italy. Yes, and he does speak Italian. So maybe that's another reason that spot got chosen. It could be his favorite Italian restaurant in Orange County.
So
then they go on about why they are so successful. We're going to skip over that because we don't really care about that. Too late for us. But then they get into a discussion about sleep. And it just reminded me so much. You know, Arianna used to be on our Satellite Sisters radio show from time to time. And whenever she was on the show, instead of phoning in the way many people did, she came to our studio in Burbank. So it would always be fun. You know, Arianna Huffington, she has a big, big personality. And she would blow in, and we would have a lot of fun talking to Arianna.
And yeah, this is when she had first started the Huffington Post,
right?
And everything was very bloggy, and you know, she was like, she really created that adjective. I think, oh, you must blog about that. That's so bloggy, right?
She used to say that to us all the time. That's right.
Yeah.
Like Sheila would say something crazy, and Arianna would say, "Oh, that's very bloggy." So in the story, they're noting that what Ariana calls the sort of macho culture of not sleeping is that if you were successful and powerful, you had to brag about how little sleep you get, that you only need 4 hours. And that, but then she had this sort of, you know, transformative moment where she collapsed from exhaustion in 2007. And I've heard her talk about this before, and that's her current bestseller, the book Thrive, was sort of prompted by that moment too. She's completely changed her life since that happened to her. But I remember so much when it happened to her because she came into our studio the day after that happened. She walked in, she was wearing big dark sunglasses. She sat down, like in the studio, it would be me, Sheila, Leon, and a fourth chair for guests in front of a mic. She sat down in front of her mic, took off her sunglasses, and her entire side of her face was black and blue.
Ooh.
I mean, we gasped. It looked like she had been in some terrible accident or something. And so we asked what happened. This is before we were on the air. And she said that she had just collapsed the day before and literally from a standing position just fell to the floor, like a dead drop to the floor. So all the black and blue was from just falling. And
of course, Sheila did not believe that, right? Sheila thought she has had a facelift. It's just, it's left over from cosmetic surgery. I remember Sheila telling me this.
So in the story, they both talk about how their attitude towards sleep has changed a lot as they've gotten older. And we were just talking about this the last couple of weeks on Satellite Sisters. So I noted that Ariana says now that at the end of the day, her transition is a hot bath and absolutely no devices. All phones and computers are escorted out of my bedroom at least an hour before bed. So I'm not sure what that means, that's whether someone comes in and is...
Yeah, but who's escorting them out?
Seizes them from
it's
her.
Like, oh, brother.
Yeah, so she's okay. So a hot bath, no devices. And Kobe chimes in and he says he does the same thing. He has a hot shower and then after the shower, the phone is off. And it's just like he completely shuts down. So, you know, I've been working on the device thing. No devices in my bedroom, and no TV before I go to sleep. But I've never really been a shower at the end of the day person. Have you guys ever tried that?
Oh, yes.
It really helps. Yes.
Really?
I do it on a regular basis, but when I don't feel well or really want to get to sleep, it's really, really delightful, especially if you have clean pajamas.
Oh, really? Okay.
Keep that in mind.
Ooh. Liz, you have the spa-like bathroom.
Yeah. I know, I do.
Oh, go ahead. Definitely. Have a nice shower. It's very relaxing.
So I always figure then you're going to bed with wet hair.
And put on a little Peter Coyote.
Then put a shower. That's what, like, shower cap are for.
Oh, I can't imagine using a shower. My favorite thing about a shower is getting my head wet.
Okay, well, okay, I can't help you with this.
So going back to Kobe and Ariana. So as we've established, we do, you know, we are in Ariana's outer circle.
Correct. We feel close to her, but she does not necessarily feel close to us, Liz. Yeah. I think that's a good way to put it. Yes.
I would like to point out that Sheila and I have actually been to parties at Ariana's home.
Yes.
So
yes, you have.
I know that's hard to believe.
Yes, it is, Liz. It's hard to believe. Yes.
Outer circle.
Outer circle. We seem to have dropped off the party invite list since our show went off the air. She apparently does not realize that we're podcasting and we're still very bloggy.
Yes.
Anyway, so we do have that kind of history with Ariana, but you guys know, but our listeners probably don't know, that I have a teeny tiny little bit of a history with Kobe.
Yeah.
And in this story, at the very beginning of the story, when they're kind of explaining how they know each other, Kobe says, you know, the reporter from the Times says, "I didn't know you two know each other. How did that happen?" And Kobe says, "I'm known for sending out cold emails. I love learning from people, blah, 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 blah." And I have been, as you guys know, the recipient of those cold emails.
Mm-hmm. So much so that you didn't think they were real, right?
I know. That is true. I will confess that. I will confess that to this small group. I got a cold email from Kobe Bryant in February of this year. I was traveling in Asia when I got it. It never crossed my mind that it was real, and I just deleted it.
And there aren't that many people named Kobe.
I know, but it's so easy to fake an email. Like, yeah, I knew it was someone pretending to be Kobe Bryant. I just didn't actually see any reason why it would actually be Kobe Bryant. So, as you know, I deleted it. And then he called my office to try to find me, and they were confused. And I was like, ignore it. There's no way that could really be Kobe Bryant. Anyway, sooner or later, we did actually connect. And now we are occasionally in contact with each other. And he's a super thoughtful guy. You know, he's sort of near the end of his NBA career. And he's trying to figure out what to do next. He's got a lot of interesting ideas. And he's a very interesting guy to talk to. So I could totally imagine him reaching out to Ariana, and that those two would have quite a little chat. So one of the things he said in the story, my favorite anecdote in the story, when they're talking about competitiveness, you know, which obviously both of them are hugely competitive. He said, let me tell you a story. My daughter just went back to school. She's 11. And she said to me, remember when I used to get nervous about math and her hands would get really clammy? And so I asked her how she got over it. And she said, I started thinking that once you take a math test, it's done. I'm going to wake up the next day. It may be a good day. It may be a bad day. But the cycle continues no matter what happens on the math test. So the reporter says, so that means like being great in the clutch, you know, for someone like Kobe, means knowing there's a moment after the clutch. And he says, right, there's an infinite groove. Whether you make the shot or not is inconsequential.
Oh.
Don't you think that's kind of deep?
Yes, I do, Liz. Yeah.
I thought it was kind of deep. So, you know, I will admit to you that, so when I read that the other day, I actually texted him. And,
oh, yeah, of course. Of course. Thanks, Liz.
And just, you know, just because it was a very interesting thought. So I said, I really love the idea of the infinite groove. And he responded, he said, oh, yeah, building my entire company around that belief. So, okay. You know, just in case you wanted to, like, everybody thinks these guys that, like, shoot baskets for a living have nothing going on. I'm just constantly reminded, because I've worked with so many different kinds of athletes across many sports over the course of my career, that they, many of them have some really, well, there's something that makes them great at sports that also applies to like how they approach their day-to-day life. And maybe it's the infinite groove. Maybe that's the way you put it. So I just thought I would share that a little bit, that he's working on the infinite groove, and I feel like, seems like a good goal.
That's good. And you are clinging on to the coattails, Liz. That's what I like about it. No. No, that's good. That's good. It's a great thought. It really is a great thought, Liz. And it's an impressive thought.
You know, and it's interesting, going back to the air rage discussion, I think about that all the time when I'm on an airplane. I say to myself, no matter how bad this is, it will be over tomorrow.
Right.
And
Liz, you know we love talking about Framebridge, don't we?
We do. Because there are just so many fun things to frame, Leon, aren't there?
Right. Anything. You can just upload a digital photo from your phone and they can print it and frame it. And that is a gift right there, a gift people would love getting. But Liz, you recently had quite an exciting Framebridge experience. Would you like to share?
I talked about how when we were at the Bruce Springsteen concert, I was with our brother Dick, his wife Susan, his two kids, and one of the roadies threw us the set list at the end of the show, which was amazing to get the actual set list for the actual concert in Los Angeles. And we're like, oh, yeah, any day now, that's going to be in a place of honor in their home. Sure enough, Leon, they have already Framebridged it and sent it to us with a picture. So I'll be in Bend next week, so I'll get to see it. But it's just excellent use of the Framebridge resources, the Bruce Springsteen set list.
Fantastic. And this is gift giving season. So if you have a graduation coming up, a wedding, a shower, Mother's Day, Father's Day, look around. I'm sure you have something fun you can frame, and Framebridge can do it for you. It's easy and it's affordable to frame just about anything. You get fair and transparent upfront pricing based on the size of your item. There's a great selection of frames. And as we've said in the past, fast service, free shipping, great for gifts. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Liz, not many things in life give you a happiness guarantee, but Framebridge does. If you're not 100% happy with your piece, they will make it right. So if this
but
sounds like...
But you're going to be happy, okay? That's just the Satellite Sisters promise. You're going to be out. You're going to be happy you did it.
See why Framebridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit framebridge.com or see a local Framebridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything, like a Bruce Springsteen set list. That's framebridge.com. Thanks, Framebridge. Liz and Leanne here, and we are so grateful to have Osea support Satellite Sisters. Why? Because it's just a great product. Holy cow, do we love Osea's skin and body care. And you know what? This Mother's Day, just look no further than Osea. Spoil the moms in your life with the little luxuries from Osea. The moms, the stepmoms, the bonus moms, the people who bring a touch of something special to your life, aunts, grandmothers, they would love a little Osea this Mother's Day. And you can get 10% off your first order by using our code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And Liz, you know what every mother and mother figure needs?
What?
More moisture, Liz. They need more moisture in their skin.
No kidding. I mean, really, the creams, the lotions, the oils. I love it all. That duo they have going. Oh. Like, you can't miss with the duo of Osea.
Liz, the mega moisture duo.
Yes.
You can literally see your skin get firmer. And it just delivers this full body glow. Okay, you know we have raved about the Undaria Algae Body Oil. Mm-hmm. Well, pair that with the Undaria Collagen Body Oil. Youthful, yeah. Liz. Your youthful, yeah, glow is going to happen. And it's infused with Osea's signature Undaria seaweed. So it just smells so delicious, doesn't it?
I know you're talking about giving it as a gift. I also suggest just giving it to yourself because you're worth it.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Okay, that moisture duo I mentioned too is a great value because you can save 16% plus the extra 10% with our code SADSISTERS. So this is it. This is a win-win-win Mother's Day gift. Spoil the moms in your life with clean vegan skincare and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with the code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And you get free samples in every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Osea is spelled O-S-E-A. So head on over to OseaMalibu.com and use code SATSISTERS for 10% off. Thanks, Osea.
So it is that sort of zen of travel thing as it applies to being an NBA superstar. Mm-hmm. So we're all really the same. Isn't that the message?
Sounds good to me, Liz.
We're all just like Ariana and Kobe. Mm, yeah, that's what I take away.
Okay, moving on. Are we ready?
Yeah. We're ready.
We're ready. So I wanted to talk to you guys about this. Epicurious, you know, it's the food website. So this morning I was reading an article and they had frequently mispronounced food words. And it was a dictionary with phonetic pronunciations. And I thought that we could go through a few of them. Now, I do have some issues with some of the pronunciations, but they did correct me on a couple of words that I was mispronouncing. But they started out by saying Giada De Laurentiis. You know, she's the Food Network chef, cook. She has a new restaurant in Las Vegas, and she has phonetic spellings on the menu. So where she's serving ravioli, it says ravioli.
You're kidding.
I am not kidding you. Okay, next to the, and I call it rigatoni, she, yeah, has rigatone. I'm sorry, I am not going to order rigatone.
Well, that's okay. Order. Brian would order it. Go ahead. Do it just like Bobby. Yeah.
Rigatone. Just remember that's a, I'm just going to call it rigatoni. So they went through a list of words, and some of them I'm pretty good at, you know, ancho, boudin. And then I heard someone pronounce caramel as caramel the other day. Mm-hmm. And that's not correct.
I know. I would cop to that. I often say that.
Really? It's supposed to be caramel or caramel. And I know people say caramel.
Yep. Yep. I don't know why I do. You guys what? Don't?
Caramel apples. That's
yes.
what they're called.
Caramel
yes.
apples. Well, it's supposed to be...
Caramel apples.
Caramel apples. Right. Oh. Well, just stick with the caramel. We know what you mean. charcuterie. I never mispronounce that. I don't order it that often, but it's very big.
I just usually call it salami. It's easier. Or salome. Should I be doing that?
Now, apparently there's some high-end restaurants around the world where they're serving a certain fungus that I would call lichen. But if you'd like to order this in a restaurant, it's actually lichen. So if you want to eat fungus, make sure you order the lichen. Well, I'm just not going to order that. Okay.
I think I'm just going to order the mushrooms.
I'm not going to order fungus, lichen or lichen. Now, sherbet is a word that I often mispronounce. Mm-hmm. I want to say, for some reason, sherbert. Mm-hmm. I want to put an extra R in there, but that is not correct.
That's not correct?
No, it's sherbet.
Oh, okay.
I know. I always thought it was sherbert, but that's just me. Now, here's a word that I normally pronounce as hummus, but in this dictionary, in the Epicurious Words, they said you were supposed to call it hummus.
Hummus?
Now, who calls it hummus? So I did a little bit more looking into it, and I guess hummus is American English, but hummus is British English. So go ahead and call it hummus if you want to.
If you want to be a pretentious British accent.
I don't think you're going to get the dip, though, if you say hummus.
Who? Get some hummus. So here's a word that this kind of bugs me. When people are talking about the little cookies that are called macarons, but they're calling them macaroons. Now, those are two different cookies, people. Macaroons, you know, the shredded almond, sometimes dipped in chocolate.
And, yummy, yes.
Which I love macaroons. Uh-huh. Macarons are those little sandwich cookies that come in those little jewel tone colors. Yes. And there's a little cream filling in them.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Now, I always call them macaron, and that's the French pronunciation. But I did not know this. The American English pronunciation is actually macaroo.
Macaroo?
Yes.
No one says that.
No one says that.
I've never heard that.
I never even knew they had a name. I have to admit. This is all new to me that they have their own name.
Liz, what do you call them?
What do you think they called?
I don't know. I just never called them anything. I've never heard them called anything. I knew they weren't macaroons.
Right. Well, the thing is, I hear them called macaroons all the time, and it bugs me. But I did not know that, according to Epicurious, macaroo in English. Okay. And one last word from Monica. I know it's pho. I know I'm supposed to say pho, but I just always call it pho. That's the noodle soup with the broth. And I just have a hard time saying pho.
I'm totally with you there. There are a lot of Vietnamese restaurants around in Portland, and you know, it's a delicious frugal traveler kind of food to have.
It's wonderful.
Pho. I'm just going to call it pho, no matter what.
Okay,
sorry.
Call it pho too, Liz. Even because I always like pause and say, "Well, I went out and had some pho."
It doesn't sound like much if you're just eating pho.
No.
And I know that's the correct way to pronounce it. but I cannot do that. So I'm not saying pho, and I'm not ordering lechem. Any other words, you guys? Food words that you?
Let me think. No.
Bufalata was on there, Julie, but of course we know how to say that.
Yes.
Yeah. No.
Okay.
Well, I have a much more mass market, lowbrow food issue that I wanted to bring to your attention. This is based on a tweet I received from Pepperidge Farm this week. And I'm sure everyone who follows Pepperidge Farm...
who follows Pepperidge Farm?
Who is tweeting the goldfish? You're just like, who's sending out this tweet?
So you just get product news from Pepperidge Farm.
Like updates from the Southport collection?
Like? Yes, exactly. Like, here's one, Julie, from a couple weeks ago. It said, today's hump day treat is a soft-baked Santa Cruz oatmeal raisin cookie. So I just like hearing about that. I think it was Leanne that got me tied into this, because you know how she loves the Pepperidge Farm, and she especially loves the goldfish. And so the Pepperidge Farm Twitter feed always has breaking goldfish news. And so that's what we're talking about right now, because I think they've gone too far now. I enjoy the fact that the brand extensions of goldfish up to this point, I think, have been a successful effort. Mm-hmm. And so they've gone beyond just the basic goldfish into other flavors, other colors, other sizes. I'm okay with that. But 2 days ago, I got this question from Pepperidge Farm. What's your favorite fall flavor of goldfish? Is it caramel apple pie? Or is it pumpkin cheesecake? So, I'm sorry. That doesn't seem right. Those are actual flavors of goldfish now?
Liz, I appreciate that you said the word caramel.
Caramel, yes. I would have said caramel. If we had done this segment before your segment, I would have said caramel apple pie. But no matter how I pronounce it, it's still a bad idea. I don't know. Does that sound appealing to you at all? Caramel apple pie?
No.
Goldfish?
I don't know. They've
goldfish savory.
Savory, exactly.
Savory treats.
Yes.
It's strong.
Savory,
it's like,
yes. It's savory, like salty.
It's like the cappuccino potato chips or whatever all those flavors, the salted caramel potato chips. It's wrong. It's a savory snack, people.
But Liz, they must have, I mean, you know how these brands are developed. I mean, they must have test marketed these flavors.
Yeah, to 6-year olds.
Because it's more like a cookie now. It's like a macaron. Or a macaroon. That's what it tastes like now.
Macaron.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there are these seasonal things they try out now, Julie. And, you know, just like the pumpkin latte has taken over the world, which somebody I was listening to on the radio the other day just kept saying, pumpkin latte is not coffee. Pumpkin latte is not coffee. Can I just remind you before we go, pumpkin latte is not coffee. That's the way I feel about pumpkin cheesecake. It's not a goldfish. It might be the kind of snack you want. I just worry that by calling it a goldfish, now I feel like I've taken a position on this and I need to open up. Oh, wait a minute. They're calling them something else. Okay. They're in goldfish packages with goldfish on the package, but they are not using the word goldfish at all. They're calling them. I can't even read this on my little.
This is breaking Pepperidge.
Breaking Pepperidge Farm news.
I'm holding my breath.
I know.
What is it, Liz? Please tell us.
This could be totally my error here. They're in a goldfish-like package, but maybe these are just cookies.
Maybe.
In which case, I approve.
I think you're going to have to apologize to them.
Okay, Pepperidge Farm. Well, I'm in charge of editing the show, so I can just take this whole segment out.
No, I think you should. I think it stands for what it is, Liz, the confusion in the marketplace.
Yes, too many brand extensions. I think I just got misled by the packaging. Okay. I knew Pepperidge Farm would never do that to the goldfish. Okay. Okay. Phew. All right. We're over there. All right.
And now they really won't.
The crisis is past.
Shoot. Well, the goldfish is safe. Because we do need to wrap up now, Liz. Final note about how great was Derek Jeter's last game at Yankee Stadium. Did you watch it, Monica? Did you watch it?
Yes.
It was. As anyone who cares about baseball knows by now, he had a hit in the bottom of the ninth to win the game. It was just incredibly awesome. He just has had this amazing career. And it was super emotional. He was getting very emotional, which doesn't happen very often with mm-hmm. Derek Jeter. But I think for me, part of the reason I was getting emotional watching it is not just because Derek Jeter is, has been such a great player and such a great Yankee, but it really made me think a lot about mom and dad and about sitting around a lot and watching Yankee games with mom and dad or going to Yankee Stadium with dad. And so it kind of brought me back to what it means to be a Yankee family and the tradition of the New York Yankees. So I think that's why I found it very emotionally compelling. And I was thinking about how mom, she had certain players that she really, really loved. Like whenever Dave Winfield ran out onto the field, mm-hmm. mom would say, "Now that's what a Yankee looks like."
She loved the way he ran.
She did. She just loved Dave Winfield. And she loved Paul O'Neill because he was the brother of Molly O'Neill, the food critic at the New York Times. So that's, she loved the fact that Paul O'Neill was a Yankee. As a family, I'm sure we can all name where we were when we heard that Thurman Munson died, right? But I think about the Yankee games that dad would take us to, and we had a big family. So, it was sort of random who got to go, who was around and all of that. So I was thinking about some of the years of going to those games with dad. And so I did a little search on because I feel like I went to a lot of games with dad to see Derek Jeter. And then I realized, well, he didn't start until he was 1992 was his rookie year. So that made me feel incredibly old because in my mind I was thinking, oh yeah, in the 70s and 80s when he would go all the time. So no, Derek Jeter is not, 57 years old the way I am. He was a rookie in 1992. Huh. Anyway, so I think that it was a beautiful moment for Derek Jeter, for the Yankees. You saw his family there. I think he got the emotional, send off that he deserved. And one piece of marketing advice I would add in to parents who would like your child to be a superstar athlete. We've talked before how giving them snappy names like Tiger is a good idea, but also a highly chantable name is a good idea.
Yes.
And that's what you heard on Thursday night, the Derek Jeter, Derek. If you have too many syllables, you can't do that. Like the two-syllable first name, two-syllable last name, highly chantable. So I just want to put out that advice to anyone. Two syllables, two syllables. Think about it. So did you guys have any particular Yankee moments as you were thinking about it?
I was actually thinking about the pitcher who was pitching to him in that moment, thinking like, whoa, this is a very historic game. Here I am pitching to Derek Jeter, bottom of the ninth. And, what it must have been like for him and for all, all the players. He just had so much respect from everyone around. And he gave us all great memories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know he's in Boston this weekend. The final games were with the Red Sox. We have many Red Sox fans who are Satellite Sisters and listening. And he announced in advance that he was not going to play shortstop this weekend in Fenway Park because he wanted his last game at that position to be in Yankee Stadium. So I'm sure you can understand that. People in Boston may be disappointed because I know a lot of people did, even though, Bostonians hate the Yankees. They do seem to love Derek Jeter. So if you're there to say goodbye to Derek Jeter this weekend, have fun with that. Okay, last thing, and then we got to go. I know. Birthday present for Sheila. So I don't have a lot of time to shop. You know what's available in my neighborhood. I was looking at, like, bath products yesterday, and I thought she probably has a million of those. So any last-minute suggestions? Okay.
Gift card in a fancy, fancy bag. You know, she loves wrapping and ribbons. And that's whatever you do, just dress it up, Liz. You got to sell it.
Okay.
You know,
that's it. Okay. All right. Monica?
I think you should bring her a turkey sandwich for Marmalades. Because I know she probably has nothing in her refrigerator for dinner tonight.
Oh.
You know,
okay.
She loves Marmalades.
Yeah. Okay. All right, that's a good idea. So we have lunch together, and then I send her home with dinner.
Good.
All right, thanks. Okay, wow, it's more than an hour we've been doing this today. So, apparently we had a lot to say. So, you guys, you got a good week planned, Julie? You and Leon on for Tuesday?
We are. We're going to be back. It is sort of the mini finale of Outlander is this week. So we're going to be talking about that. And, of course, a lot of other news, notes, and trends. Yes.
News, notes, and trends. Okay, sisters, have a good week. Enjoy yourselves. Take care of yourselves. And everybody, don't forget, call your satellite sister.
You walk into the world you make. You lose yourself, but you find your way. I'm going to watch your radio. 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 Turn so slow, I know it's hard to wait. But take your time, son, it's yours to take. I'm gonna watch you radiate, 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 oh, oh, radiate. These rocks, they hold heat. Pools of water cool your feet. As you walk, you believe every part of the dream. I see you lost in what you create, all of time in this one single day. You take it and you radiate, 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 oh, oh, radiate. Follow your hands as they build, as they shape, as they follow your mind that rolls like a wave. Take it and you radiate. Radiate, gonna watch you radiate, oh, oh, radiate. Well, these rocks, they hold heat. Pools of water cool your feet. As you walk, you believe every part of the dream.